Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
I want to begin with that 8.8 magnitude earthquake off the coast of Russia, which has led now to tsunami warnings of varying levels, which have been issued from Japan to Hawaii all the way to New Zealand. The first waves have made landfall in some places, but bigger ones may be on the way. This is still very much an unfolding situation. Honolulu Mayor Rick Blangiardi has asked people to heed evacuation orders, stay calm and stick to high ground.
We're under a full tsunami alert here. And so that said, we at this point are taking that most seriously. And our appeal to you is to, if you're in a low-lying area, get yourself safe, get to higher ground. Okay, we ask people to stay calm, cooperate. We know the roads are full out there.
Dylan Ancheta is an anchor and reporter with Hawaii News Now who is on the island of Maui. A full tsunami alert, says your mayor of Honolulu, Rick Blangiardi. What does that look like from where you are, Dylan?
Aloha. Well, thank you so much. Just actually a few minutes ago, the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center has downgraded this to a tsunami advisory. So it is a lesser urgent tsunami alert. The warning, of course, was in effect for several hours. And when a warning was issued, we saw many residents in coastal towns seeking higher ground. And the geography of Hawaii, so many of our population is along the coastal towns. And so we saw mass exoduses from across all islands, from Maui, where I currently am, to Honolulu, which is the most populated one. People were really making their way away from the shorelines, up to the mountains, to inland, anywhere they could possibly be.
Dylan, are Hawaiians well drilled for these eventualities? Is it something that they do in an orderly fashion, or was there a slight sense of panic?
You know, we have had our experiences over the last century. You know, we have had some very devastating tsunamis. There was one in Hilo that claimed the lives of many, many, many years ago in the 1960s. And so while we don't get these very often, it is fairly rare to get an urgent tsunami warning. We do have a history, a knowledge that the ocean is powerful, and the residents of Hawaii understand that. They respect that. And, you know, every time there is some sort of emergency, there is always going to be a little bit of panic, confusion. But ultimately, people know, you hear the sirens, the emergency sirens, head to higher ground, grab your supplies and stay calm.
And the evacuation center that you are in now, how well resourced or equipped are these places if you have to stay there for a long time?
Well, I actually just spoke with the Maui County Mayor, Richard Bisson, and I was at the Wailuku Community Center, and that was a shelter that actually had a little bit of an issue. There were some concerned residents there because they didn't have bottled water. There wasn't much food. There were no cots or beds available. And the mayor said that specific location was a little bit of an anomaly because they bussed some people in from other places to that one. But for whatever reason, that one was a little bit less filled with resources. But we do know that some of the other shelters did have more resources than that one specifically.
In practical terms, what does this downgrading from a tsunami warning to a tsunami advisory mean?
It essentially means that we can start to breathe a sigh of relief. We are not out of the woods just yet. We are still seeing some tidal shifts and some currents, some odd behaviors in our shorelines. And so the emergency officials are telling people it is not safe to go in the water. You should not be going into coastal areas. But at this point, the height of the threat has likely passed us. And I do want to mention real briefly, we did see some tidal changes throughout the entire state. Some places saw just a few feet. The highest one recorded was about 15 feet, 15.7 or so. But that doesn't necessarily mean that all of that water came on land. It could have just meant that it rose on the shoreline beyond where the water normally breaks. And we do know that on Hawaii Island, in Hilo, which is the east side of the island, they are experiencing much more significant flooding. We got video where a hotel lobby was, the water line was just up to their steps, which is rather unheard of for that side. So ultimately, we are starting to breathe a sigh of relief, but we are not out of the woods just yet.
Indeed, and it'll be some time before a damage assessment, a complete damage assessment, can be reported, because I suppose it's important to emphasize you are obviously away from the coast and not in a position to tell us what has happened.
Yeah, and also at the time now here right now is actually 11:11 p.m. And so in nightfall, it is very hard to determine. The estimated time of the first impacts was around 7:10 Hawaii time, and that is right when our sun is setting. And so we had live cameras all across the state, and we tried to latch on to whatever traces of sunlight that we could see. And in that time, we did see the ocean kind of receding a little bit, the changes in the tide. Once the sun went down, it was rather hard for us to fully determine. But I will say, from everything that we are seeing, this was not a super severe, not a very disastrous incident. It was more so really isolated to the specific coastal area. So ultimately, it's good news.
Good news in Hawaii, as you say, but that is some distance away from the epicenter of this quake. Let us go a little bit closer now to that epicenter off the Russian coastline, to Japan, and David McNeil, Tokyo-based journalist. David, what's the update or the latest from Japan?
Good morning, Philip. As your previous caller explained, there was a tsunami advisory which was issued this morning, and then that was updated to a warning. And the warning basically meant that people all along the coast, the Pacific coast, all the way from Hokkaido in the north, right the way down to the very south, were told to leave. They were advised to leave. The tsunami started to arrive around about lunchtime. So there was the highest that we can see so far was a 1.3 meter tsunami that was recorded in Iwate Prefecture, which is up on the northeast coast. And then there was sort of various levels of tsunami after that, 80 centimeters, 70 centimeters. Nearest to me, like we're in West Tokyo here, so we're about 25 kilometers away from Tokyo Bay, so we're not even affected by it. But the nearest place to us would be Yokohama, and Yokohama had about 40 centimeters. And what we're hearing at the moment is that the warning has been downgraded for most of the country, but an advice apart from Hokkaido up in the north. But there's still an advisory in place, and that's going to last until, I think, tomorrow morning. That's what we're seeing so far.
How well drilled are Japanese people now since the 2011 earthquake that took out the Fukushima nuclear power plant? Because I remember reports from that time of one of the big problems being people rooted in their armchairs watching their televisions and just unable for whatever reason to actually take action and evacuate.
Well, that's right. And I covered that disaster for the Irish Times. And I remember lots of very tragic stories of people sitting watching their TVs as the tsunami came, sort of underestimating. And what you have to remember, I guess, to be fair to everybody, is that these tsunami alerts come quite regularly in Japan. There's tsunami here going back thousands of years, you know, and once every 30, 40, 50 years, a big one comes along. There was a big one in 1960. And imagine you live along the coast and you've heard, you know, dozens, maybe more of these tsunami alerts. And the temptation is to just ride them out and say, well, it'll be fine. Who wants to get into the car? Or who wants to walk in the heat up to a temple or a local community center? Let's just take a chance. And that's what happened in 2011. And, you know, with tragic results, because a lot of people, it was about 18,000 people, of course, died in that tsunami. And in quite a number of those cases, there were people who just sat watching their TV while the tsunami came.
What has happened at Fukushima since 2011 to mitigate the possibility of another tsunami?
Well, they've built, of course, a higher wall, and they have tried to fix the big problem, or they have fixed the big problem at the time, which was that the cooling system was in the basement. It was in the below water level at the power plant. And of course, that was once the power was cut off, once the electricity pylons were toppled, then the only thing stopping the reactors from overheating, of course, was these generators, and they were washed out by the tsunami. So that's been fixed. The plant is being cooled by a system of a water cooling system, which constantly keeps the fuel, from overheating. But it's far from solved. I mean, everybody says the same thing, but the fuel, the melted fuel, still sits in the bottom of the reactors, and not a single ounce of it has been removed. It's an ongoing issue.
Okay, David McNeil in Tokyo, thank you very much. We're also joined by Professor Chris Goldfinger, marine geologist at Oregon State University. Good morning to you, Professor. What is your assessment of this still unfolding story? Does it look like a bullet has been dodged?
Well, you might say so. Yeah, I mean, this is about the sixth largest earthquake in recorded history, and so it's a very large earthquake. But most of its energy, luckily, it was in Kamchatka. It was fairly lightly populated. You know, the town, a Russian city of Petropavlovsk, is nearby, but they're reporting pretty light damage, and so the outbound tsunami into the Pacific was directed in about the safest direction you could have. You know, Hawaii was on its path, and further away, Central and South America are on the path. But so far, it seems to be fairly well behaved, and West Coast of the U.S. has been has received its tsunami already, and averaging about a foot in height. And so that's very good news. The tsunami in Hawaii was about 4 to 5 feet. And so it's not over. There'll be surging in the harbors and things like that. But we have in a sense dodged a bullet. Yeah,
I have heard reports that the first wave will not necessarily be the biggest wave, that the worst could yet be in store. Is that the case? And is there any way that early warning systems can help you predict the size of what's incoming?
Well, yeah, generally that's true. You don't want to assume that the first wave will be the largest, and often it's not. And so in a few historic cases in even recent times, people have gone back, you know, toward the coast when it was too early. And this happened in Chile in 2010. And so you have to assume that there's going to be at least a number of hours of waves, and any one of those waves during that time could be larger than the initial wave. So usually when you do evacuations, people will be told to, you know, not approach the coast again for at least 12 hours or something like that, just to cover that possibility.
Chris, we report earthquakes in terms of their magnitude, 8.8 for this one, 9.1 for the Fukushima one in 2011, and 9.1 for the 2004 Indian Ocean earthquake. But is that incorrect? How important are other factors like the duration of the quake, the depth of the quake, and its distance from the shore?
Well, those are great questions. That's a really good point. It's not just the magnitude. Another really important factor is the depth. You know, if the depth is 100 kilometers or greater, the chances of generating a tsunami are very low. And the duration matters. The duration matters particularly for the earthquake itself, because buildings are susceptible to long duration shaking. But also other things can happen. You know, you can generate a submarine landslide that would amplify the size of the tsunami and things like that. And, you know, what the water depth is in the location of the earthquake matters a lot, too. If you're in 5,000 meters of water and the fault slips, you're going to move much more water than if you were in, say, shallower, if the earthquake occurred under the shelf or something like that. So all of those factors play a role, but we tend to simplify in our minds to just the magnitude, and that's a bit of a mistake for sure.
Mm. How good are the early warning systems now? How much do they tell you about the size and the nature of incoming tsunamis?
Well, that's a good question. The warning systems are pretty good. What they have to do, though, is they have to differentiate the tsunami from the ocean waves that are there all the time. And that's a little bit of a trick. And also recording this, the mid-ocean tsunami, doesn't tell you everything you need to know about what the tsunami will be like when it comes ashore in shallow water. So they're imperfect, but they're actually fairly good. The weak point in tsunami warning systems, though, is the fact that the outgoing tsunami, the ocean, open ocean tsunami, is fairly easy to record, and we have plenty of time. You know, for example, the U.S. West Coast has 9 to 10 hours advance warning to take whatever appropriate action is needed, but the local coasts, so the town of Petropavlovsk, for example, would have no warning at all. And so the incoming tsunami at the local coast, that's the problem. The tsunami warning is not going to help much there. But on the other hand, the earthquake is the warning itself. And so if people are well enough educated to realize that an earthquake that big has 100% chance of generating a tsunami, then you have a good shot at evacuation and a warning system becomes less critical.
I think there's a rule of thumb for sea level rise that for every meter that the water goes up, it will come inland by 100 meters. In the case of a tsunami where there's a surge and more force, does it come further inland than that?
Well, it does, because tsunami, the wavelength of a tsunami in the open ocean is as much as 200 kilometers. So when that wave comes in, it's more like a tide that just keeps coming and coming and coming and coming. It's not like a normal wave. It's much more like the tide that has an upper limit that's much higher than normal. And so the normal things that would stop waves will not stop a tsunami. It'll travel over land and up rivers and up estuaries and things like that. As long as there's relatively flat ground, it can go many kilometers inland. And in the case of a river valley, leading into a headland or leading into higher ground, the force of forcing that water up that canyon can bring it to 100 meters or more or more above sea level. And that's happened in Japan.
Professor Goldfinger, thank you very much. Coming up on the program, how to budget for back-to-school costs. But next, the Probationer Garda attacked in Dublin city centre yesterday evening. We'll have the latest.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.